now entering
the Horror Sanctum.
Hello and welcome back to the Horror Sanctum podcast. I'm Jay with John, Kellen, and TJ. And we're excited to be joined this week by actor, writer, producer, director, and one half of the infamous Fogg Brothers, Alan Frog himself, Mr. Jameson Newlander. Jameson, thank you so much, and welcome to the Sanctum.
Thank you. Thank you. Really nice to be here. I don't know. Yeah, it's nice. I appreciate that. That's a nice introduction. So it covered a bunch of stuff. Yeah.
Thank you. I wrote it today. So you've been in several films, several that I love. You're in The Blob. You were in Bone Tomahawk, which one of us watched today, finally, due to peer pressure. but you're probably best known for the Lost Boys franchise, where you, like I said, play Alan Frog. And, you know, I know you do podcasts, conventions, and all that, so I'm sure you get a ton of Lost Boys questions. Spoiler, there will be some here. But I wanted to start with your last film, 2023's Waking Nightmare, which is available on Tubi. If you're not familiar with the film, a family doctor prescribes her Ambien to help with her sleepwalking. Jordan finds her condition getting progressively worse and more dangerous. You play the dad, Jeff, in the film. My first question about that film is, have you ever taken Ambien?
You know, I probably did once or twice is my guess. Yeah, I didn't sleepwalk or anything.
So this is a movie where if you watch it, you're like, okay, like I can see how people can, like, it's kind of odd. But if it's a person who has taken Ambien the incorrect way, like I have myself, it makes a ton of sense.
So you took it incorrectly. Did you?
Yeah. So my, and this is just a J, this is turning into the J show real quick, but I used to have trouble sleeping a lot. My doctor said, do you have sleep apnea? I'm like, I don't know. She's like, well, here's Ambien. You might die. And she sent me on my way, you know? So I just automatically assume, because I don't read directions, because I'm a guy and that's just how I work. I'm like, you take it, you get sleepy, you go to bed, right? That is not the case. You take it and you go straight to bed. If you don't, you wake up to paintings that you painted in the middle of the night, but you didn't own paint or canvases. So that means I got out of my house, went to Walmart and bought this shit and came home and painted.
Is that really, did that really happen?
This is true. This is a true story. I have like three Ambien stories I can remember. One.
Can I see the paintings?
Long gone. This was years ago. This was when MySpace was the thing.
Sure.
Another instance, I woke up and I had changed my entire MySpace page to Rastafarian. Like all the colors, all the pictures. Don't remember doing that. The only one I have photo evidence, the only event that I have photo evidence of is I got to the point where it wasn't really working. So I'm like, I'm going to take two. 30 minutes to an hour later, I got a text from my friend Kerwin, who TJ knows. I don't think anybody else knows. He's like, hey, I just got pulled over. I don't have insurance. I don't have a driver's license. Can you come get me? And I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, he has nobody else. He's in the back of a cop car. So I drive my ass to pick him up. We have a photo of him holding up his ticket. I'm glazed over. Like,
I think I've seen that photo.
It's on. We'll share it for this episode. It's on Facebook. Ambien is insane. So if you haven't seen Waking Nightmare, like I said, on Tubi, watch it and go into knowing that. Like, if you've ever done any kind of psychedelic drug or anything like that, Ambien is essentially the same thing. It has its purpose, but if you misuse it, bad news. Along with that, what was it like working with Diane Franklin for the first time? Because you guys were very active. It seemed like around the same time frame, but you never hit a movie together until this one.
Yeah, exactly. First of all, working with Diane was amazing, partly for the same reason that like working with Corey Haim was amazing. You know, that's like someone who I loved and respected, you know, who I really wanted to work with. And I didn't really know her in the 80s. I think she probably was a little bit, I think she's maybe a couple years older, maybe. Or maybe I'm a couple years older, I should say. I don't know. But so we just kind of didn't do any movies together at the same time, you know. But it was like working with her was, I find this with a lot of people that I respect, that it's really an amazing experience. It's so giving. It's like what it's meant to be, what we got into this for, you know, because it's that amazing feeling, that connection that you have. And we had a really nice connection. You know, when you play husband and wife, you know, it's like, you know, you got to love each other a little bit, you know? So, you know, I think we both came away. I'm noticing in our communication since then that we both came away like loving each other a little bit, just in there a little bit, you know?
Yeah. That's always fun. Now, was this a film that you had to audition for? I think you did another film with the director, right?
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, Brian Farmer, approached me for this movie because he's been working his way up, you know, on the horror side. He had a couple of other movies, that I worked on with him, and he came to me with this script, and it was great. I thought it was great from the beginning, and he's such a talented dude. This guy, Brian is like, he just kind of knocked it out. He had a vision for it. He knocked it out in like a weekend or something like that. I mean, you know, it's like when stuff like that, you know, it's brewing for a long time, I'm sure, you know, and so I really loved it. And then he told me that Diane Franklin was in it, and I was like, oh, this is great. This is really exciting, you know. But then actually it sat in post-production for a long time. You know, it was one of those where it was like they ran into some trouble, you know. It wasn't exactly the final product. You know, this often happens. You guys filmmakers, I mean, you know, it's like, it's not exactly what the script was. You know, it's like, there were some kind of like curveballs that went on toward the end of production that I think made it like, okay, it took a little while for them to find like, what is the movie here? You know, what movie do we have here? And I thought it was really exciting, you know, finally when they put it together, because they found some threads that just were there that they were able to pull out. I just thought it was really, really well done. And I also think Diane, especially a couple of scenes, I just think just blew it out of the water. I thought she was amazing. You know,
yeah, I agree.
Shelley also, I think Shelley's a very talented actress.
Yeah, she was. And you know, it was a movie that I didn't go into with any expectations, because like I said, I'd never heard of it. I just, you know, preparing for you, did a little research. I'm like, oh, it's on Tubi, I'll check this out. And I really enjoyed it. Again, I can relate to it. That helped a lot. Totally, but it is well done. It's well acted. Definitely check that out on Tubi.
I appreciate that. I'm glad you say that, because I really think it's good. I'd love to push it. You know, I'd love to get it out there more. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Hopefully it will. So we'll move on from that. In your emails that we had back and forth, you had mentioned your Santa Cruz Lost Boys YouTube show.
Yeah.
Which sounds absolutely amazing. So tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, so like this was just last year, God, this has all happened so, you know, kind of quickly, that last year I was like, you know, why am I not going up to Santa Cruz? You know, it's right there. It's not like it's easy to get to. It's still a flight or like a 5-hour drive, you know, at best, you know, but it's like, I was like, why don't I go up there and just kind of see what's up? And maybe I'll do a little show about it. I'm not sure. You know, I went up, I met with Joe, who's the owner of the comic book store that he was the owner of the comic book store from the movie, and then that was destroyed. That's what the third episode is about, actually, of the YouTube show, is that the earthquake of 89, I think, destroyed the comic book store, and so they raised it, you know, they leveled it and they moved it, so, you know, he's the new owner. So anyway, I talked to him and he was like, yeah, do a signing. Nobody from the movie's ever done a signing up here. So I did it, and then, you know, I just kind of, you know, these days it's like I have an iPhone and a little mic and, you know, somebody to hold it and, you know, just kind of like, and you know, and then all of a sudden we had a little show, you know, and it was like, oh, cool. And then, you know, and then I was playing around with stuff and I was like, you know, I went up to Grandpa's house, you know, that was the first show, is Grandpa's house, the Pogonip, you know, and I was like, I started playing around with things. I was like, so let's go check it out, you know, like as if it's like some, you know, as if it's like a show, you know, like a, one
did
of
you
those.
Do this motion like this, like wave your arm, like, come on, guys, let's go check
yeah,
it out.
Yeah, I got to do that. You're right. I don't know if I even specifically did that, but so it's like, you know, having some fun doing that kind of stuff. And then, you know, so then I put together an episode. It was like, okay, that's cool. And then, you know, then a friend of mine, Will Fredericks, who's now my producing partner on it. He I realized is, you know, he's a big fan, and he knew all the locations. And I was like, hey, you know, I'm headed up again, Santa Cruz. You know, to do another one of these shows. You know, do you want to come help me? And so I didn't even realize I was tapping this kind of gold mine of like, you know. So So I've been up to a bunch of the locations. The first show was about Grandpa's house, the Poganip, which is like, you can't even go inside. It's like if you go inside, someone went inside, they had to be rescued. You know, I don't even know why, but you know, like I'm trying to figure out why they'd have to be rescued. But you know, maybe they fell through the floor or something like that. Is my imagination runs wild. But so you know, it's like you can't get in there, but it looks the same, you know, from the outside, you know, which is pretty cool. And then so it's neat. I just kind of, I'm there, I tell stories about what it was like, you know, what memories come up. I even get a little emotional in the second episode. I got a little emotional about being in Santa Cruz, being back up in Santa Cruz and everything. So, you know, and then I also put on, there's a local artist who had made all the jackets of the Lost Boys, like, you know, duplicated all the jackets. So I put each one on and walked on the carousel as each one, you know, just doing fun stuff like that and bringing, you know, the cast in little by little as I convinced them to do it with me, you know, like I got the frog dad, you know, the starting there with like, you know, behind me and Feldman in the comic book store are our parents. So it's like, nobody really knew where they were, you know, that kind of showed up at this audition. Hippies, you know, local hippies. I mean, kind of. And so we tracked him down and we have him on the show, you know. So that kind of stuff. It's really fun. I encourage you guys to check it out, and your audience, of course. You know, it's on my YouTube channel. I mean, for some reason my YouTube channel is Jameson611. And I could probably change it and maybe I will add another one, but it just now it's sort of like maybe I'll play around with like get the 611 from Jameson.
So you've been in several horror movies in your career.
Yeah.
The Lost Boys trilogy, 1988's The Blob, Sky Harbor, Bone Tomahawk, like Jay mentioned earlier, more of a thriller, but Walking Nightmare. Do you find yourself drawn to these horror roles? Are you interested in doing horror roles, or has that just kind of been a coincidence in your career?
What's interesting is that I was never a horror, you know, audience member, because I really get too scared, or at least I did when I was younger. I could not understand why people wanted to go to horror movies. I would just get so freaked out. It was kind of like certain roller coasters, you know, like you get on this roller coaster and you're like, why did I do this? Why am I on this? You know, but then as a thrill, you know, so I've learned to appreciate the thrill, but I'm not naturally a horror guy. I think it just kind of happened. I mean, Lost Boys, you know, Lost Boys isn't really a traditional horror movie per se. You know, it's like, it almost kind of, not pokes fun at, but it almost like you know, like it's like a perfect example. No, for example, like you know, like what Tarantino was doing with Pulp Fiction. You know, it's like Lost Boys was almost like a recreation of that kind of genre film. Am I right about that, or am I making that up? That it almost was like,
I can see that. Yeah,
sounds right. It kind of becomes
a different take on the vampire genre.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And so it's like, I forget where I was going with that, but
I get sidetracked all the time with that. Right, exactly. ADD.
Yeah. Like off on some tangent and you're like, I just can't buy my
squirrel.
So like Jay mentioned earlier, I'm the one who didn't watch Bone Tomahawk until this week. It had always been on my list, but I just couldn't find it streaming anywhere. Finally found it streaming. So watched it. Fantastic film. But yeah, when you totally read that script, do you realize how brutal that movie is going to be? Or is it not until you actually see the scenes being recorded where you're like, oh, wow, this is a lot?
Yeah, that's how it was for me. I mean, because you don't know how far they're going to go. You know, are they really going to show it this or that? You know, and I mean, and also I'm not great at reading stuff and being able to picture it, you know, like, you know, being like, oh yeah, this is what they're going to do with it, and it's cool, you know. And also, and also Craig Zoller, you know, this is his bust out movie, or his debut movie, really. He was writing a bunch of scripts. He was, you know, really talented writer, and he sold a bunch of scripts, and then he was like, you know what, we're gonna make a movie. You know, we're gonna actually make a movie. You know, it's like, you know, those classic stories of like scripts go into development and then you never make movies, you know. And he wanted to make movies. You know, Craig was a, you know, just like lived and breathed film, you know, from when I knew him in New York. And so it's not surprising that he came up with something that was like, was just like, wow, you know, amazing. And right out of the gate too, you know, And then, you know, we were right up against Hateful Eight, you know, because it was, you know, it was like Kurt Russell. It was the same editor as well. Fred Raskin edited both of those movies, Bone Tomahawk and Hateful Eight. So, and people were really like, we really came out, I don't know about on top, you know, because that's Tarantino and he's amazing. But I think we held our own against the Hateful Eight with like a one like tiny piece of the budget. You know, it was a really low budget movie.
I think Bone Tomahawk's better. I would say it's better.
I was going to say it's definitely an easier watch. Hateful Eight is fantastic, but it's classic Tarantino where it's a little drawn out.
That's a great double feature, though.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, that's a great idea.
And Hateful Eight's mostly one location too, whereas Bone Tomahawk's like a journey film.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I heard Craig talk about it. Maybe it was at the premiere, and he was like. He was like a Western, you know, they have Westerns that take place in the same. I mean, he wasn't trying to take a knock at Hateful Eight, I'm sure. But he was like, you know, they have things that are called Westerns, but they take place in one location. He's like, to me, that's not a Western. To me, a Western has to have that, you know, that movement, you know, that, you know, which I think is a decent point. And, you know, like I'm inclined to take Craig's, he's probably seen every Western out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the dialogue in that was really well done, I thought, as far as just the way they talk felt like it was the way people would have talked back then. So, yeah, just a real enjoyable film, and the cinematography is great as well. Speaking of, Kurt, you've worked with Kurt Russell, Kiefer Sutherland, Corey Feldman, Alex Winter, Patrick Wilson, David Arquette, just to name a few of the big names. Is there anybody that stands out where you were kind of in awe of them watching their process, or you took things away from watching them, or anybody where you're just like, I absolutely want to work with that guy again?
Yeah, well, so there's a lot of people in a lot of ways. I mean, I was, maybe because we were talking about Bone Tomahawk, I was really impressed with Matthew Fox. You know, it just, we all were, you know, the day we were on set in the saloon there, he was very much a part of it and part of the sort of the crowd that was there. But at the same time, he had a much more serious role and everything. And then to see him in the movie, I was like, That's really impressive to see that. And I sometimes don't think of Matthew Fox, or at least at the time, I guess this was after Lost, wasn't it? I can't remember.
Yeah, a couple of years after. Yeah. Lost was a phenomenon. And I think that may be one of those actor's curses where every time I see him, I immediately think of Lost.
Yeah.
But he was fantastic in this movie.
Yeah, totally. I agree. And so, I mean, that's just off the top of my head. I would say that there's a lot of people I want to work with again. I want to work with Diane Franklin again. I don't know about when I say looking for projects, not like we're like our agents are like conspiring or anything, but you know, we've talked about wanting to do another thing together. And I was really impressed with Jason Patrick. Watching him on Lost Boys, and not just how he was, you know, because the trick with that movie is that, you know, he was very clear about not wanting to make a vampire movie, you know, flying around with teeth and, you know, kind of thing. And he kept that movie grounded, I think. And not only for him, but also for Haim as well. I've been talking to him a little bit recently about how, you know, Haim is really talented, but he was a bit all over the place, and that kind of brother relationship, you know, just that was really impressive. You know, watching that, you know.
So Lost Boys, to piggyback on that, Lost Boys was such a seminal film for all of us millennials, of all of which of us on the show would probably fall somewhere in that category. It's just a movie you grow up watching. So, you know, the whole deal. It is one of the seminal 80s movies too, not just 80s horror films. And great cast, great story. Joel Schumacher, such a very original director. Tell us a little bit about working with him and what it was like, maybe even auditioning to get, because this was your first film role, right?
Yeah, I mean, I had gotten other types, other roles that were film or a bit of TV. I did like a commercial and some TV, and I had not done a feature film. I had done like a TV movie and stuff. Yeah. So, first of all, you know, I was just, it's interesting. I was just talking about this because Joel was amazing in a lot of ways. He was so fun. He was like, he instilled fun into everything. Now, he also got, he could get really, he was a screamer also, you know, like if he was upset about something, you know, or if something was off track, you know, these directors, you know, especially at that time, this was his, he was busting out, you know, he hadn't proved himself yet a little bit with St. Elmo's Fire and stuff. But he was really, you know, it was on the line for him, and he really put it on the line. And so, you know, you didn't want him to be mad at you. It was really a bad feeling. And, you know, he rarely was mad at me. If he was mad at me, it was really just like collateral mad because of Feldman, you know, because Feldman was like, maybe he was an easy target. Maybe he was a little slow getting into wardrobe sometimes, but I've talked to him in adult life, and he said like, he had all these pieces to his costume, and he was always getting all these pieces on. And then he would be like, Joel would be like, Corey Feldman, get your ass in here, you know? So there was that side of Joel, but I think we all really loved Joel as a kind of a sort of a father figure at the time. I mean, he was really guiding us, kind of like an uncle in a way, like a really important uncle, you know. And he, you know, because there's a story that in the probably the next episode of my show on YouTube, the James, you know, Lost Locations show, we're doing it on Tim Capello, you know, sax guy, and he tells this story about how when he met Joel, he was auditioning, he was in Warner Brothers auditioning for something else. And Joel calls him into, he gets someone to like take him to his office, you know? And he's like, Tim, do you have a phone? Do you have an agent? Are you in this business? You know? And like, because he was trying to get in touch with him, but it's a good example of how, you know, he was sort of annoyed in a way, but he was being funny about it. You know, he was just a lot of fun. You know, and I definitely credit Joel with making the movie what it was, having the vision and then having the ability to keep us all not just on track of his vision, but growing his vision, you know, like nurturing us all that in ways that would grow his vision, you know. So
I actually wrote a note down while Kellen was speaking, because I had assumed that he was going to mention Tim Capello in his questions, but he didn't. We've seen him live twice.
Yeah,
he's John great, right? Saw him with. He is fantastic, and he's so kind. And he'll stand there with you until 3 a.m. in the morning, taking Don't pictures you. And hugging you. Have you seen him any shows like live recently?
Yeah, I saw him down in San Diego at the Till 2 Club. You know, it's just on his tour. Like he's been touring the country, right? He does this.
Yeah.
Where are you guys?
We're in Nashville.
Yeah. So he you know, I'm sure, right, he goes to Nashville, he goes to that area, and he, so I saw him in San Diego, and that's what.
Did you participate in the dance?
Was there a specific dance?
That's
right, of
yeah.
Jamie.
Yeah. That was one of the funnest shows I've ever been to, so anyway, sorry, TJ, continue.
No worries, I know that there's a lot of Tim Capello love to go around on the show, totally, yeah. So. I'd be surprised if someone didn't say something, but yeah. So speaking of, you know, you're talking about wardrobe and whatnot, how much freedom did you have with like all the military fatigues and like the cutoff muscle shirts? I think you wore a beret for a good bit of time. Right, like right. Was that all Joel Schumacher's idea, or were you given some freedom with wardrobe?
I think that, you know, the vibe Joel had was, you know, that all ideas are welcome, you know, bring us, you know, talk about your ideas, talk to the wardrobe about your ideas, talk to special effects about your ideas, you know. And I don't know if they were really serious about that. I think they were. I brought up some ideas that I think that they're just not interested in, but they were nice about it, you know. But like the military stuff, I think it was something that they were sort of trying to go for potentially. And so they brought it up. They said that in the description of the characters for the audition. And then I wore military stuff. Actually, my dad had like three different military jackets that I just at some point I just thought it was kind of tough and kind of, you know, for me to wear those jackets. And so I was used to kind of wearing those jackets, and then I wore it for the audition, the one with the dice on the sleeve, you know, that they had in the movie. They recreated that based on, that was my dad's army jacket, army fatigue jacket, you know. So in that sense, I had a big influence, you know, in that sense, which was cool, you know. And the beret thing, I think I might have asked for a beret, to tell you the truth, because I thought berets were cool. But then at some point in the middle of it, I was like, oh no, did I screw myself? I have this beret on, like, you know what I mean? Like, should I be without a beret so that people, I could be more of a movie star or whatever, you know? And so I brought it up and they were like, ah, I mean, you know, there's a bit of the movie I don't have a beret, you know, a bunch of that I don't have a beret anyway in the comic book store, you know? But yeah. Then it's like, once we get to the fighting and stuff, they were like, ah, it'll be good for them to, for the audience to be able to be like, that's the one with the beret, that's the one with the red headband, whatever.
Yeah, it's part of your combat gear, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the combat, yeah.
So what was it like working, because you were like right there in the middle of the two Coreys at kind of the height of their fandom and fame. Yeah. Was there a lot of craziness surrounding that? Do you have any stories from that era of time of what it was like to be hanging out with those guys?
Yeah. So the thing with me, really party, I was talking about this recently on another podcast, like, and I'm kind of piecing it together in adult life. Like, it wasn't really until even maybe after college that I really began to understand the idea of going out and having a good time and kind of bonding with people and stuff like that. And so I didn't really do that much and that well, you know, so I didn't really get caught up in that. And I also, then I went off to college not too long after Lost Boys. So, you know, I just didn't see that much of the craziness, the true craziness of the two Coreys. Now, I will say that I was there at the beginning of the two Coreys. I was there, you know, within a month of them meeting for the first time. And then that summer, or the summer of 86, when we were doing the movie, and then, you know, a bunch of the time after that, but especially that summer, it was like the three of us, we were hanging out, you know, and so it was like the two Coreys, that was just beginning, you know, that was like the like germ, you know, beginning of the two Coreys. So I have that going for me. You know, I wasn't there for the true craziness, which maybe was good, you know, but
probably so.
Yeah. You know,
so I have a question. So, and looking kind of into your filmography, it looks like you did Lost Boys, and you had a role in The Blob, which was one of the great horror remakes of all time.
I agree. Thank you.
Special effects, everything, acting, great film. But then it looks like you took off like 15 years and then directed a film called Rooster, which looks to be a comedy. Is that available anywhere? I could not find it to stream.
Is that right? I got to make it more available. It's on my YouTube channel. And it's, you know, if you go to my YouTube channel, or if you go to Rooster Newlander, if you Google Rooster Newlander, you should be able to find it. It's in two parts. And it's a cute little movie. Actually, Craig Zoller, who directed Bone Tomahawk, did the cinematography on it.
Oh, very cool.
He was a DP, you know, in New York.
So what were you doing for those kind of, I guess, going to college, figuring out life? What were you doing for that gap of time, and what brought you back to filmmaking?
Yeah, so I was doing theater, basically. Okay. I had this idea that that after Lost Boys, you know, it's like you never know what to do exactly. You don't know exactly how to play it. And I didn't exactly have great advisors because I wasn't an industry kid per se. Like, I didn't have family in the industry. I didn't, you know, and so I thought it was this cool idea that I would do Lost Boys and then I would go to New York and I would be a New York stage actor, you know, but I would have the film thing going on still, you know. It didn't exactly work out that way. Like, the way it worked out is that I went to New York and I did theater, and that was great, but I was building up a theater career, you know, and the film career is a whole different thing. People don't care about theater. Theater people don't care about film. I mean, that's not true. They do care about film, but I mean, you know what I mean? They're two different worlds. And so really what I did is I killed that film career. And so all through my 20s, I was in New York and I was doing theater, and it was amazing. It was an amazing time. It's the 90s in New York. And so basically the entire 90s, I was in New York doing theater and being an artist. And, you know, it was an amazing time, but it didn't do great for my career. And so I decided in 2000, I met my wife in New York, and
we congratulations. Both
decided, thank you. Thank you. We both in Hoboken, of all places, you know, Hoboken, New Jersey. And so we both decided to move out to LA. We were both trying to be actors and, you know, whatever. And I was like, let's do it. Let me finally, you know, begin to rebuild it. And so one of the things to do to rebuild it was to do this film, because I didn't have any current roles. You know, I had, you know, none of my theater roles translate. You know, it's like I have some cool pictures. If you go to my website, jamesonnewlander.com, you can kind of see a bunch of pictures from my theater career, which might help kind of fill in the blanks a little bit. And then, so then I came back to film, but it still wasn't, you know, it takes time. It was building like a whole new career again. And so I think little by little was doing stuff like getting roles here, like clawing my way back, you know. And then I started doing conventions in like 2005. And that was good, but, you know, still like moving along. But then there was Lost Boys, you know, The Tribe, which I, you know, ended up having that. It went to the special features, you know, which was good actually, because it was, I don't know if you saw it, one. It's a little nuts, the long hair. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then then The Thirst, you know, and it was like beginning to build it back, beginning like, okay, cool. Now I'm not just like an actor who had a role, who had some roles as a teenager. I have some current roles, you know. And then that led to, you know, I have a role in like the two Corys movie, you know, the two Corys TV movie, and the and then Bone Tomahawk and Waking Nightmare. And I just did a gig last year that was like, it's not a horror film. It was more of like a feel good movie. It'll be out in a few months, called Mr. Manhattan, you know, just another role. I play a lawyer, you know, so it's like just kind of building it up again. You know, it's like, you know, that poem, If, you know, by Rudyard Kipling, you know, and it's like, it'll make me emotional to think about it, because it's a really cool poem. But he's like, you know, if you can watch the things that you gave your life to broken, and then you stoop and build them up again, you know, with whatever tools you have, you know, it's like, that's one of the things about life that you got to do sometimes, you know. So
yeah,
that's where we are.
Always in the process of rebuilding something.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So I wanted to comment. I really love your artwork over there.
Oh, thanks. This the Lost Boys thing?
Yeah, that kind of reminds me. So when you were filming The Lost Boys, something I've always wondered, recently, I know this is an odd thing to say, but I've been watching Gilmore Girls again, and I know on a horror podcast bringing that up. But Edward Herrmann is in there. He's the grandfather, right? So every time I watch it, I'm just laughing, because I keep thinking of Max, right? I'm like, this is so, and my wife's not into horror, so I had this vision in my head. So when you're on set, and, you know, I know that sometimes you're not in certain scenes, you might not be there when they're filming something, but like, for instance, like at the end when Max does the big reveal and he's like, I still want you, Lucy. And, and then like in the middle where David takes his crew out and they really kind of abduct Michael and they kill the bikers. When you saw that makeup for the first time, was that very creepy, or was it kind of one of those things where you're buddies and you're just kind of like, it doesn't really affect you seeing them like that?
Yeah, it didn't scare me. I mean, it didn't scare me, but it did. When I saw it, I was like, whoa, like, because it's like, it took their faces and then it just like, they all like, their faces like bulged out, you know, it was like these things. But, you know, like I watched the process of it happening. I was in makeup and I would look over and, you know, they have this, you know, this like latex thing that they put on, you know, and then they put it, you know, they attach it. And then, you know, and it's like, I know what it is. It's hard to, you know, I don't think I ever was scared, you know, looking at that kind of stuff. Maybe the eyes, the contacts were pretty freaky, actually, because that was all new. Like you could change someone's eyes, you know, that was trippy. But also like for the where they like revealed themselves and had Michael, you know, with Michael and everything like that, I wasn't anywhere around that. Like they did all that probably like in the middle of the night, some weeknight, and we were mostly shooting on weekends at the comic book store in Santa Cruz. And okay. So, you know, it's like those were location shots. All the location stuff was done in Santa Cruz. Most of it was in Santa Cruz in a couple other spots. But then all the inside stuff was done in Burbank on the studio. Like even the, you know, they rebuilt the grandpa's house in Burbank at Burbank Studios. And so all the interior stuff, you know, because then you can pull out a wall and you can, you know, bring the camera in from above and all that sort of thing, you know. So, but I was there for Max's reveal. He was like nervous about this monologue. The monologue, I think he didn't quite realize they were doing it that day. That was my impression of what happened. He was like, oh, okay, we're doing that. You know, it's like that. And then he came back and he was like, I don't know. He just nailed it. You know, I was like, this is a pro. You know. And then also when he did that thing with his tongue, you know, when he's like, I still want you, Lucy. And then he like goes like, bleh, you know, in his tongue. I thought he forgot his line, you know, and that actually he might have, you know, that could be, that stuff happens, you know, that it's like sometimes you forget your line and you just do something and then that ends up, you know,
thing. So I could see that. I mean, especially when you're friends like that, it's not the same. I mean, I remember seeing that the first time as a kid and I'm just like, like you said, the eyes, that's the craziest thing. So, you know, I am a fan of the sequels. I like The Tribe. I like The Thirst. I would say that I like The Thirst a little more. I feel like it's more of like a fun kind of, and you're in it more. It's just a fun story. What was that like? Did, you know, for years and years, people talked about sequels. Did Joel ever get close to doing one, or was it always just kind of like the script has to be right? It's not there.
I don't know how close they ever got. I know from the very beginning, or not too long after, I remember having a meeting with him at the Ivy. I don't know if you've heard of the Ivy. It was like a big industry place, you know, that people would go. And so I had like lunch with him at the Ivy. Did I say dinner? I meant lunch. You know, I had lunch with him at the Ivy, and it was just very like Hollywood kind of a thing, you know. And I was like, wow, I'm really on my way here. Like, they're talking about a sequel. They were like the Frog Brothers. He was like, we're gonna bring back the frogs. And we're going to bring back Corey Haim, and, you know, and it's going to be, and I was like, wow, that's awesome. And then I didn't hear anything about it, you know, for like 15 years, you know. And then, I mean, you know, at different times I tried to get a sequel going, you know, but so, I mean, what was the question? That it's like, what was it like waiting for a sequel or wanting?
Cause it seems like it would just be so obvious to do a sequel so fast, but I know sometimes, you know, you don't want to mess up what was so great. So I don't know how Joel was. I mean, I imagine he seems like a great artist. Like, he might not have wanted to go there. Like, you know.
Yeah, I think that the thing about Lost Boys, this is what I heard, and I think it's probably true, or at least there's some truth to it, that like that Schumacher owned a piece of it, Donner owned a piece of it, and Warner Brothers owned a piece of it, and so it was hard to get everybody to agree. You know, I'm not sure why exactly. I mean, you know, things got, I mean, then also like, you know, the Corys were big and then they crashed and then, you know, I don't know, you know. And so I'm still working on trying to get a Frog Brothers show together, actually, which would be really cool, I think, in a good kind of way of, you know, it would be like, you know, if Cobra Kai, you know what I mean? They did that, and it's like it's not exactly Karate Kid. It's something slightly different. I think we can do that, something slightly different, but, you know, still honor the franchise. That would be really cool if we could do that.
Yeah, you guys almost could like take out vampires everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Oh, kind of like what the Ghostbusters have done. Like, they still had those key elements from the original, and then they're introducing these new characters.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we could have a school, you know, a vampire hunting school, or, you know, whatever.
Those guys would totally do that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I think that, you know, Hollywood is a weird place. I mean, and I it's not like I'm like Mr. knowing what's going on in Hollywood. I don't know. There's very few people who really, I think, probably think they do know what's going on in Hollywood, but I'm certainly not one of them. But it's hard because something like that has to have momentum, you know, right. even though it's like, it seems like a no-brainer. It's like, it still needs momentum. People excited about it, excited about that specific version of it, you know? So that's what we're working on, trying to put that together.
So one thing I was curious about too, with the tribe and the thirst, watching them, I've seen them both a few times, and I don't, it feels like when I'm watching them, the thirst would seem like, just watching it and the performances, it would seem like that probably was a funner time. Like that was more of a memorable set. The tribe, I don't know. I feel like, you know, you didn't have a bigger part. I know you were in a deleted scene in that. And I know, I'm sure that probably, I don't know. I just, in my mind, that seems like that probably wasn't as fun. Would you say that's true, or was it the opposite?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that's part of the problem that they didn't quite see with the sequel, is that I think, you know, with the sequel, with the tribe, somehow someone made the decision, guess what? We don't need to have the original cast in it. We'll just do it this way, you know, which I don't think was the right choice. And yes, it was cheaper. They didn't have to pay for the people that who's originated those roles. And, you know, they did it for really cheap, you know, and they made a bunch on it because it was a good market for them. So the DVD market was really, it was like before the Redbox, you know, it was like DVDs were, you know, renting for a lot and stuff. So they made some good money on it, you know, but at the same time, I think they missed that kind of fun that you're talking about, that we did get back a little bit with the thirst. We got it back a little bit because the Frog Brothers were together. You know, it was like, you got a little bit of that, like, oh yeah, this. And then now, oh cool, it's turned into this. You know, even if it's like, it's not as quite as good as the first movie, right? It's like the first movie is this amazing, like coming together of all these artists, this moment in time, you know, lightning in a bottle, whatever. You know, it's like, this is a follow-up story, enjoyable. Really enjoy it, you know, different kind of, yeah, you get some of that fun back. And I think they shortchanged it with the first sequel, and I think they were trying, well, they ended up coming at it late. Like Feldman was really just supposed to be a cameo and in the tribe, and he really was like look, you can't just do that, you know he really kind of worked his way back in, and in my opinion was really the best part of that movie, you know, certainly for Lost Boys fans. You know, the other performers, wonderful work. You know, I mean, I think they should be commended stepping into these roles and doing a good job and everything, but it's not the original franchise. I mean, that's what people wanted. And so, I don't know, that's my feeling about it, you know.
We mentioned Tim. Have you seen Feldman live?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, there's a bunch of times I've seen, you know, like yeah. I sort of like, I bet I've seen him live 10 times.
Oh nice. We've only seen him once, but it was so much fun, like from start to finish. Like he is a showman for sure.
Exactly. I love his head. Exactly. He's a real showman. Yeah.
So we're gonna wind things down. I do have a quick question, and this is nothing to do with you, but have you seen a movie called Hawk and Rev Vampire Slayers?
No.
So it's directed by Ryan Barton Grimley. Let me see what year it was from. 2021. So it is 100% influenced from Lost Boys, so you should check it out. Really? I think it's on YouTube. It used to be on Tubi. I don't remember how I found them. I think it was on Instagram, and they're like, you know, we'll send you a link to the movie. We'll send you some stickers. I'm like, yeah, I'll watch it. It was a lot of fun, but it's heavily, heavily influenced.
I love
Lost Boys. So yeah, check Hawk and Rev Vampire Slayers. It's a lot of fun.
I've heard of that one.
You've heard of it?
Heard it from me.
Yeah, I've heard of it. Probably for
yeah, I feel like it rings a bell somehow that there was something like this. Like, I got to check it out because I got to, like, if it's awesome, I got to tell them that.
Yeah, it's fun. Like, the best part is they have, like, boom, surprise steak. Like, he just has steaks hidden everywhere, like, on his person and in the houses, you know. But yeah, check it out. All right. So that's going to be it for this week's episode. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and to wherever you're listening to this podcast. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok and join our group over on Facebook as well. And come back next week when we are going to have a chat about the most talked about horror movie of 2024 so far, Late Night with the Devil. We got a screener of that, but we decided to wait a month before we spoiled it for everyone. So come back next week for that. Jameson, thank you again for joining us. This was a lot of fun. You want to take a second and tell everyone what you have coming up, your YouTube handle again, and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, totally. So check out my YouTube show. It's called Jameson Newlander's Lost Locations, Searching for the Lost Boys. There's three episodes up. It's on my YouTube channel, which is Jameson611. You can also find it on my website. If you go to my website, jamesonnewlander.com, there's a tab called Jameson TV, and I have those. And actually, Rooster's on that as well. Okay. So check that out. I have a movie coming out. It's not a big part, but I play a lawyer in this movie, Mr. Manhattan. It'll be out in a couple of months. and I'm going to a convention in the UK at Newcastle in a couple of weeks, and also be at New Jersey Horror Con in 3 weeks at 19th through 21st of April. So
nice. All right, go check that out. Subscribe to his YouTube channel. Show him some love. We would appreciate it. And all right, signing off, I'm Jay with John, Kellen, TJ, and Mr. Jameson Newlander. And until next time,
keep it spooky. Also, Hulk and Rev Vampire Slayers is apparently available on Amazon Prime and the Roku channel now, if anyone's asked.
Okay, I do have to ask one thing before you go, because I meant to ask it. When you're reading the Lost Boys script, or maybe you didn't know this in the end, when Grandpa knows everything and finds out, when you see that or read that, are you just kind of like, what the fuck, he knew the whole time?
Yeah, I think they were looking for an ending, and I think it worked out fine. You know, it's like, it's just quirky and bizarre enough that it worked, I think. But it was a bit of it, like, you know, when you're writing a paper in school and then you're like, you know what? I think it's done.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was a little bit like that, but I think we got lucky, you know, because I think it's a cool ending. You know?
Oh, the one thing I never could get used to is all the damn vampires.
Right. It's like it ties it all up together in this cool way, you know, and then you're like, wow, he knows about it. What does that mean? And, you know, so
every time I hear somebody say the whole time, I always think of Sally Field and Mrs. Doubtfire. The whole time, the whole time, the whole time.